everyone, and welcome to Another Bite, where we rewatch the most innovative and intriguing pitches from Shark Tank. I'm Jory, and I'm joined by the jazzy, the jovial, the jammy John.
Hey, what's going on?
Today in the tank, we have a product that aims to help you grow better. No, it's not HubSpot, but this'll sure be a product to remember. Truly unbelievable. Particularly relevant if you've bought any plants lately. Sit back, relax, and turn up the volume. We're about to cover this product and the shark's response in just a bit. Teams everywhere are dealing with a serious problem, a productivity problem. It's no secret, and it's nothing to be ashamed of. Most tech is too complicated. There are too many time-consuming tasks, and teams aren't getting the info they need to close deals and connect with customers. Don't worry, HubSpot's customer platform can help. It was built to save time and make your job easier so you can get back to building your business. No more hours wasted on time-consuming tasks. No more chasing down prospect info. No more one system for this, another for that. HubSpot can help you find leads, reach prospects, and deliver the insights you need to convert them to customers, all in one place. Plus, HubSpot AI can literally do more of your work for you so you can focus more on scaling your business, because HubSpot knows you have some big growth goals and they're here to make your productivity problem no problem at all. Visit HubSpot.com to learn how they can help you grow better. Today in the tank, we have Flora, and Flora is brought to us by Abesh, who is asking for $300,000 for 10% of his business, which is a $3 million valuation. Now, his product is Flora, which is essentially a very fancy plant sensor that comes with an app that's all designed to make sure that you, the house owner, is keeping your plants as healthy as they can be. So the problem, many of us know, is that it's really hard to keep plants alive. You forget to water them, maybe they're not in the right light source, and they die. So the solution is Flora, where you essentially just put the sensor into the soil of your houseplant, and it's able to tell you all about moisture readings, light readings, temperature readings, humidity. You have this app where you can scan your plant and start to track all of these parameters of success, so you never have to worry about a dead houseplant again. So thinking about our pitch, our founder, and our product, John, initial thoughts of Flora.
My thumb is not green, Jory.
So you would be a perfect person for Flora, right?
You know, I decided to phone a friend on this one.
Okay, tell me more.
There's a resident plant lady in my life.
Okay.
Her name is Juliana. She's on the marketing team at HubSpot. And her plants always look so incredible on Zoom calls. And she's always talking about her plants. So I was like, I got to ask an expert on this. Like, what is the deal? Mm-hmm. Would you use this product? And so I sent it to her to get some real live
user research,
target market feedback, mm-hmm. user research. I was texting with her and she had to reply with a voice memo because she had a lot of thoughts. So here's what she told me. She told me, number one, it's just kind of ugly. She just didn't like the look of it.
Okay.
This is a problem because the reason she has plants, of course, is to look incredible in her home. And she just felt like, the look of it, I just wouldn't want that lying around in my plants. Certainly not multiple plants. The second thing is there are just free alternatives out mm-hmm. there. And she uses those alternatives, actually. Like, she's got a free app that tracks when to water things, yada, yada, yada. It doesn't go quite as far as this product goes. Like, it doesn't measure the dampness of the soil or whatever, but it generally gives a guide on when to water plants, which is typically good enough. And because she's a plant lady, she's got legitimate intuition about whether her plants need more or less. And that's part of the fun.
Yeah.
She's a plant mom, right? So she is in there and she can tell if her plants need a little bit more or a little bit less because the soil's more or less humid. She doesn't need an app to tell her that part of it. And she basically said she's out unless somebody that she trusts told her that it changed their lives. And so her conclusion was like, I don't like how it looks. I think there's pretty good free alternatives. I don't think I'd use it. So I'm out unless another plant lady told me this was actually totally worth it and totally incredible.
Interesting. So yes. It seems like there could be the potential for influencer marketing or even just like word of mouth in the plant community could drive this to be a yes.
Or a referral program or anything like that, you know? So yes, it seems as though testimonials and referrals would have to be a big part of this go-to-market if it's really going to work.
What are your thoughts on it being a subscription? So part of it is like you have this device.
But this is the worst part.
Okay. So tell me why that was your initial like, ugh.
Well, I'll just tell you. Like, so I actually think a lot of people, when they hear this pitch are like, wow, that seems kind of cool. Like, yeah, my plants always die and I'm kind of tired of that. And every time a plant dies, I kind of feel like a loser, you know, just don't feel good about myself.
I failed this plant. Yeah.
You do. You're like, oh God, and you got to bring a trash bag over and you're like, I'm sorry.
Put the whole pot in, have a you little funeral.
The whole thing. Yeah, ka-chunk. And so I'm like, maybe I want this, but then you find out it's $50. And you're like, $50. You're like, that's like more than the plant costs. And then you find out it's not only $50, but you got to pay a monthly subscription on top of the $50 just to get it to work. And I think that right now there's a lot of what I would call subscription sprawl on the internet. Yeah. Businesses love subscription revenue. You know why they love subscription revenue?
Investors.
Because, but you know, once you acquire a customer, they keep paying you.
Yeah.
And that's fantastic. You know, if it's not that, if you don't have a subscription revenue, you have to acquire every month the entire number of customers in order to hit your revenue number. Whereas if you have a subscription business, you have a bunch of revenue already built in and everyone you acquire on top of that's additive. It's incredible. Mm-hmm. Subscription businesses are awesome, but everything is becoming subscription and it's starting to get out of control and consumers are starting to backlash on it. The biggest backlash I saw was like, I think it was last year that BMW announced that
the heated seats
in order to use the seat heater, which is a feature built into your car, there's a button for it, but in order for the button to work, you have to pay a subscription fee.
$15 a month.
Guess what? Mm-hmm. BMW has canceled that subscription because everyone was like, this is the dumbest shit I've ever heard in my life.
I'm already paying so much. That's like kind of how I feel. There's also, it's quite the rage right now. There's an alarm clock called Hatch. Have you heard about this?
Oh, where, yes, I know the Hatch.
Do you have a Hatch?
I do.
Okay.
But I don't think I have the one you're talking about. I think I might have an older model.
Okay, so there is a version of the Hatch alarm clock where it's the same thing. You pay a couple $100 for the alarm clock itself, but then to use the alarm clock and certain features, you have to pay like, I think it's like $4.99 a month. It's all the rage on TikTok right now. And there's actually like pretty rife debate about, is it worth it? Like, because you've purchased this physical product, but it's unusable in certain
ways.
Why
do you have to pay a subscription? It's a physical product. I bought
it. Because just to power it, I think.
That's so dumb. I have to pay for electricity.
It's true.
That's what I'm paying for.
But I can understand a subscription, even on a physical product, if there's innovation happening every month. So in the case of the alarm clock, if there was a sleepy music library that was constantly expanding, or like the white noise machine was constantly getting new things.
The noise
things.
Got whiter each month. I pay $8 each month for whiter noise.
Even more white noise.
No, it's so dumb.
But I think that that's actually where they're going to hit the same kind of perception issue. In the case of Flora, is like, it's always going to just give you the same readings. And if they don't keep adding value to justify whatever that subscription fee is, I think that's where companies like Flora are going to fall short because there's that perception of like subscription fatigue. Like, why do I keep paying this every month? I've already bought the product.
Yeah. The truth is, I think businesses and investors, to your point, have seen some really powerful business model concepts over the last few years that have been enabled by technology. I think that software as a service made everybody really recognize the power of the compounding revenue of subscription businesses at scale. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, other types of businesses want to tap into that.
Sure.
There's also concepts like dynamic pricing. Just last week, Wendy's announced that they were going to do dynamic pricing on food, depending on the time of day that you wanted to purchase a burger. Oh, if you wanted to purchase a burger during dinner time, it was going to cost you more than if you buy it at 3 p.m.
At lunchtime. Hmm.
Guess what?
Hate that.
People lost their minds and they hated it. And Wendy's has already canceled it and probably fired the person responsible for dynamic pricing at Wendy's.
Oof.
So the key to all this is getting the value exchange right.
Yep.
When it comes to Uber, you understand dynamic pricing. Even if it annoys you, because if there are 100 people fighting to get a car,
surge rates and things,
you need to get more drivers on the road. In order to get more drivers on the road, you have to create demand for those drivers. Mm-hmm. It's just basic economics and you kind of get it. When you apply a concept like that to a fixed cost business like burger production.
Or plant monitoring.
or plant monitoring, the value exchange is just fundamentally off.
I see this start to play out as Flora starts to unpack its numbers a little bit.
Yeah.
Because cost to make the sensor itself, $28, pretty high. They're trying to get that lower. It's retailing for $49. And much to Kevin's point, even as a device, you have to have it that the value of the device is more than the value of a dead plant. And yeah. He was like, I can buy 4 living plants for the device cost.
Yep. In fact, why not just get a plant subscription?
Yeah, exactly.
That might be a better business model, is every 2 months, send me a new plant because the one that I had is
going to die. Yep. The time to dead is 2 months.
You know.
But then they have that subscription cost of $10 a month on top of paying $50 to keep your plant alive. I did wonder, though, if this was actually a marketing and targeting issue, too. Maybe for you and me, this doesn't make sense because we don't keep our plants alive. Or maybe we're purchasing cheap houseplants, right? Maybe to more of your friend Juliana's point, it's actually a matter of making sure that that $50 investment actually matches the value of keeping your plants alive. So I was thinking like, okay, what are the type of markets that could potentially eat that value exchange? And you know what I was thinking is folks that invest in their plants, the ones that have those wall of plants in the background, that makes sense. Orchid farmers and orchid keepers. I was looking it up. Certain orchids sell for hundreds, if not thousands of dollars. If you have one of those orchids, yeah, $50 to keep it alive. Absolutely makes sense. Same with like fiddle leaf plants.
Fiddle leaf. That's what Juliana brought up. She was like, maybe for a fiddle leaf, like you would do it because they are really
finicky.
They
are finicky. And so I actually wonder if they're trying to target too much of a broad market by saying it's all of your houseplants and they really need to go after those green thumb plant connoisseurs, maybe going to trade shows for the American Orchid Society, which is actually a thing.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. There is a society for everything, John. Maybe you need to actually go after flower farms if it's to keep these plants alive. Then maybe I think you could start to argue subscription fees. But I just think it's too mismatched with your typical plant buyer and plant serial killer.
Yeah. I also just think as an investor, boy, is it tough to really want to get in on this business. He's already raised $5 million, I think.
Yeah.
Yikes. So like, there's a lot of cash on the table. He said in the episode that he's offering the sharks a better rate. I'm sure he's offering them preferred shares. So they're going to be first on the cap table, all that stuff. But, you know, the return that this business is going to have to do to return any money to the investors is really high. Like it would have to be doing like $100 million in revenue or get like a $100 or $200 million acquisition, which seems pretty unattainable. I don't even know who would acquire them, you know? I'm actually surprised that he's not running a freemium model. Mm. That's what these other apps, I think, are doing. They offer you a free app for tracking when you should water, but you can like upgrade and it will like keep an eye on the weather in your area and do other things like that. So that almost to me is better because then you're like, well, I get it. The value exchange at free is I track when I water and you help guide me there. But if I want more value, I'll pay you for it.
But it allows the consumer to determine if they want that value also.
Yeah.
But this was an interesting math episode because certain sharks were very clear in the get-go, like Kevin, Mark, no interest in the plant business. All of the sharks had gone out but Lori. And I don't know if I've ever seen such a clever twist that this founder did to make sure that the deal was worth it so that not all sharks went out. Lori was like, it's not going to be worth me investing in you because I'm going to want such a big cut. And so the founder was very quick on his feet. He was like, okay, let's hear it. What do you want? And ultimately, through bargaining with Lori, they were able to both achieve a Shark Tank deal that they were both interested in. So I feel like he like grabbed her and dragged her back into negotiations.
Yeah.
Ultimately landing a Shark Tank deal for $300,000 at 30%, but then he countered it down to 15% with 5% advisory shares and then royalties as well. $2 a unit until her initial investment of $300,000 were paid back. So there was like a lot of math going on. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, Lori got super excited. He closed a Shark Tank deal. And Flora, despite seeming like an underdog with all these sharks going out, walked away with a Shark Tank deal.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of the things that I think is really cool about the evolution of Shark Tank is the fact that Shark Tank has begun to have more and more advanced deal structures appear in the show.
Yep.
The concept of safes, the concept of advisory shares, and a whole bunch of things like that. And I think it's just really cool to now see entrepreneurs coming in armed and ready.
And starting to take advantage.
Yeah. Well, I can just say like there's all sorts of ways to get to a fair deal here without me giving away too much of the company, which is great. And so I think the truth is the more that entrepreneurs understand the levers they have to get a deal done with an investor and to make it attractive, I think the more power that an entrepreneur has. And I think that's one really cool thing I've seen over the last season or two of Shark Tank versus in the beginning where the deals were much simpler and much more straightforward.
And the sharks kind of dictated that value.
Yeah.
This was a case where the founder set the pace of how the negotiation went. Lots of business savvy. We love to see it.
Yep.
Production for today's episode was brought to you by Ari DeSarmo. Editing comes from Robert Hartwig and support from Alfred Schultz. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify Podcasts, or wherever you subscribe to the greatest podcasts ever. That does it for me. See you next week in the tank for another bite. I want to take a break to tell you about a podcast coming to the HubSpot Podcast Network, the audio destination for business professionals. It's called The Next Wave: AI and the Future of Technology. It's hosted by Matt Wolf and Nathan Lands. AI technology is transforming the way we do business, and the media landscape is currently fragmented. The Next Wave is leading the pack on AI technology and how you can apply it to growing your business. Matt and Nathan are leading AI creators and your guiding light in the AI and technology frontier. Listen to The Next Wave wherever you get your podcasts.